Welcome to the podcast for empathy and imagination, the only show where Drew and Aubrey are curious about empathy and imagination and try to bring it to bear on the world's problems. Thanks for joining us. My name is Aubrey.
And I'm Drew Clark. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks to our listeners for being here.
Yeah, thanks, listeners.
So,
if we could,
Garden update. Can we get an update on the garden?
Well, yeah, a little quick garden update. So my automated organic garden's doing pretty well. It really looks like spring now. A lot of green, a lot of cool stuff's happening. There's like some major rains. Everything's really wet. Been using neem oil because the bugs are beginning.
What's thriving the most?
Kale. I'm basically a kale farmer. I realized that today when cooking breakfast that I produce mostly kale.
That's your main export?
Mm-hmm. It's my main export into my body from the garden.
What's next on the top 10 list?
Next on the top 10?
Top 5.
Probably, okay, top 5. Top 5's probably green onions.
So we got kale at the top and green onions.
Yeah, we got a lot of green onions. And I allow most or some or as many as aren't cut of them to go to seed. So they drop natural seeds and the cycle continues instead of having to redo all the time. So you do lose some food aspect by allowing it to go to seed because it's no longer edible. But it's worth it in the end, you know, to continue. So I let everything go to seed for a certain percentage.
Okay.
And that's occurring now. Like there's seeds are starting on the green onions and on the kale flowers. Like the leaves at the top of the kale are getting a little more narrow and spindly, and then out'll come this seed pod flower situation.
So we got kale, green onions.
And then I'd say probably after that's probably strawberries.
Yeah, I saw some strawberries in there.
Yeah, there's the same thing with strawberries. We let those, you know, obviously they fall in the ground and then other seeds.
The seeds are on the outside with the strawberries.
I believe so, yeah. And so there's, I've lost count of how many strawberry plants there are. It's probably nearly 10, maybe a dozen. And they already have little green buds on them, and it's late February.
Cool. We just got like a alternate. This week has been alternating weather, sunny and then rainy. And that's going to, I think, continue. So that's pretty good.
It's been really warm. Those are 70s.
Good conditions.
Yeah. So the garden is enjoying those conditions.
Cool. Post a picture. Yeah. Garden update. Thanks, Drew.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So what's your topic?
Well,
if I may ask you,
my topic today is extreme metal.
Is this like, is that like sheet metal?
It's like, not like sheet metal, because that's like basically two-dimensional. Extreme metal is at least three-dimensional.
It exists in an aural space, a space of sound.
Yeah, it is an art form in the musical world. Basically, metal, heavy metal, has evolved and splintered into countless subgenres.
Right.
And an umbrella of many of those, I would say, is extreme metal. And there's many subgenres beneath that title.
Is it one of the kind of top, in terms of classification, is it up there in the hierarchy, extreme metal?
If there, you mean like
Or like the family tree of metal. We at the top we have metal, and then we have kind of the sub branches of metal.
Yeah, is it sub branch? Yeah, it's a sub branch. It's all the way up to a sub branch because other main sub branches could include like heavy metal. It's kind of very generalized,
but
maybe.
Okay, but that's different.
That's different than extreme metal. There's also like power metal.
Like I guess I'm thinking of the Venn diagram.
Hmm.
What's the big circle where the little circles intersect, and what are the little circles called?
Oh, man, there's a lot of those. I don't even know all those, but I'll say...
You have metal.
You have the big sphere metal.
Yeah. Sets and subsets.
You've got, like, I think a lot of how metal is categorized for me is linearly, like where things began and where genres sort of formed. So I'd say, like...
Like the genealogy of metal.
Arguably, Black Sabbath began metal.
Right.
Some say maybe Deep Purple did, but it's kind of more definitively Black Sabbath.
What a difference between the drumming of the supposed first heavy metal band, right. Black Sabbath, Bill mm-hmm. Ward, who's like a very much a jazz drummer, he's playing mm-hmm. very lightly, to extreme metal guys who are fasting and not eating, or, you know, not eating, not having sex, not doing drugs in preparation for these marathon recording sessions mm-hmm. because it's just maximum speed, maximum technicality.
Wow. Wow, is that true? And wow, is that something I know?
Yeah.
I actually recorded 80 minutes of extreme music in one 24-hour period on the drums.
In one session?
In one 24-hour period that I went home for a continuous brief period.
A continuous 24-hour period.
Yeah. It was one day.
Huh.
So I know a bit about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's... In the genre, subgenre world, it's fun to sort of explore the nuances and differences and the bleed overs. And it's really, I think it's really just more of another gradient where it's going to be less divisionary and more just sort of neighborly as we expand and as new metal bands occur. It's like, it could be true that one day there are no more metal bands, like there are no more disco bands.
Right.
Like, that could be true, but it seems that metal is rooted in the heart of blues that will probably never totally go
away. Yes, and I don't think genres will go away, because genres are just they're an easy way to kind of prime your expectations. You sort of know if someone says, yeah, this is a rom-com.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
You sort of, romantic comedy.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
You sort of know what to expect, right? And that's useful. So I think the concept of genres is useful, and I don't think genres per se are going to go away.
Well, what I mean by that is that new bands
coming
out in that genre tails off until zero.
Mm. So when you think of extreme metal, who do you think of? What bands do you think of?
Oh, man. I mean...
Like, you know, first...
Behemoth. I don't know.
Behemoth. Okay.
Yeah. Necrophagist.
Necrophagist, yeah.
Older.
Demon Borgir.
Why is it... What makes it extreme?
I think there are... Like, say, like...
Well, okay. Let me back up. Sorry. I'm going to base this on your own notes here.
Please.
So we have some little bit of structure here.
Yeah.
Get organized. The origins.
Thank
you. The origins of extreme metal.
Origins. Okay, so I believe that it's generally thought of as common knowledge that extreme metal probably came out of Florida in the 80s with kind of the original death metal bands where they were first using blast beats. They were like previous punk band people who were like fast as I can go contest until someone broke into where it was like not really a punk beat anymore.
Couple questions. If I could hit pause.
Pause.
What are some of the pioneering bands from Florida that were like, is Death from there? Morbid Angel? Those guys from Florida?
I have never, or to be honest, Napalm I've Death? Never been a fan of that kind of music. Like, the origination death metal sound has never spoken to me. I've never sought it out. I don't really know any of the bands.
Oh, okay. But it happened in Florida.
Right. That's really what I know.
And you mentioned, because it's part of your lexicon.
Huh.
And I don't think you're aware when you use the word, but it's blast beat.
Hmm.
And I didn't know this word until 3 years ago. Could you explain for our listeners?
Yeah, listeners. Note it. So blast beat, if you listen to the radio, then you haven't heard a blast beat. It's weird. I was thinking about this the other day, kind of thinking about talking about this, and it's like blast beats are sort of illegal in public commercial broadcasting. If you really think about college radio, sure, they play blast beats now especially, but even if you go a few years ago, that was slimmer. Mm. But especially now, like if you're going to watch television or listen to commercial radio stations, you're not going to hear blast beats.
Not going to hear blast beats.
No, because it's a form of drumming that is, it's It's you could describe it technically, but it is sort of emotionally the drummer going as fast as he or she can.
Mm. Full body, so it's a full body engaging thing.
It's at least three limbs at once, because you have to use, for it to be a blast beat, you need three sound sources. You need a bass drum, a snare, and then one other sound source. Usually, hi-hat or ride.
Yes, and usually two legs, because you're doing double bass.
Well, the origination of blast beats was with one leg. Okay. It was single bass. So if you're going to talk about the basics, it was just with the foot. Yeah.
Was that a pun, basics?
Nice.
So those are the origins from Florida. These extreme metal bands.
That's my knowledge. Originated. Yeah, that's my knowledge of it. Yeah, flourished. But I'm not. That's not. It doesn't appeal to me. That sound doesn't appeal to me.
Hmm.
It's very guttural, low. The vocals are a lot about violence and brutality. But
there's a lot of songs about love, so maybe it's good to mix it up.
You know, I think it is. I think all art ought to be pursued if it's wanted to be pursued.
I don't think art has any social obligations at all. So, extreme metal. What are some of the qualities of extreme metal?
Okay, qualities.
If I go into Tower Records.
Mm-hmm. What are you searching for?
And I talk to the clerk, and he's like, what kind of music you like?
So you're going to the music store, and you want to say what kind of music you want. You don't know, but you talk about properties, characteristics. What was the word you said?
Yeah, some characteristics of the music. And he says, what kind? I say, I'm looking for some metal. And he says, well, what kind of metal? What attributes would you like your metal to have?
Okay, oh.
And I say, I want it to be technical. I want the vocals to be unintelligibly shouted, right?
That's a good start.
I was paraphrasing you there.
Mm-hmm. I really need my metal to have some flourishing melodies, but also like pounding rhythm.
Cool. And I was saying what constitutes technical?
I think that's another gradient.
And you were talking about three chord rock, etc.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, okay, so three chord, like if you're talking about pop music, you have like, you say three guitar chords, you'd play them four strums each, and then you'd switch to another, and you do four different chords, and you would do those each four strums each, and then you go back to the three chords and strum each of those chords four times each, and that's you do that in a couple of times, and that's your song. And so that might be technical to somebody who's never touched a guitar. If you've never touched a guitar, that's like, what are you talking about? I can't even put a finger on one thing. So I think it's technicality is really a gradient of perception.
I think it's when people talk about technicality in music, they mean complexity and virtuosity and some synthesis thereof, where there's a lot of change-ups, there's a lot of complexity, and you have to be able to play fast.
Yeah, it is. It's basically a requirement, except for in doom metal, funeral doom. There's some subgenres. Right.
Stoner metal.
Yeah, you don't need to be fast, but the rest of them, you got to.
But extreme metal. Extreme metal
is mandatory.
Yeah,
you have to be able to have some version of speed.
Hmm.
Yeah. If you aren't playing fast, it's not extreme metal. Unless it's like super doom metal, then you know that's extreme too.
Lugubrious metal, very slow and sludgy.
Yeah, which I can enjoy in brief, periods, but I'm so much more attracted to things like Wretched.
The band?
The band Wretched, yeah. These guys are really good.
What's the, what was the first extreme metal band that you ever got into?
First extreme metal
band? If there is such a thing.
It is, yeah.
It's probably Gradient, but.
You know, you're yes and yes and to you, sir. And Aubrey, you know,
thank
I would
you
like
very
to
much,
acknowledge
sir.
You for being a really cool guy and being very awesome. I just want to put that out there.
Thank you.
I would probably say my first real, my first half love affair, first like, okay, I'm into it now and I'm really, my mind's really blown was Dark Tranquillity.
Hmm.
They're like
sounds goth.
Yeah, it's like Swedish death metal. Gothenburg is kind of the subgenre,
right?
And it was I can't remember if it was the album. I thought it was the album Character or the one before it, where it was like it's electronic. It's really like there's lots of bleeps and bloops and keyboards and stuff, but they play some really savage riffs, and the drummer does one blast beat like in the middle of, I think on song 5, or no, it happens twice in the song, and it's like super cool. And they could have done it way more, but the album only has one blast beat. And at the time, I wasn't playing drums yet, and so I was just a guitarist, and so I didn't really get blast beats, didn't really understand. And so it was like at first it just sort of warmed up, but then my real first.
So you started out on guitar.
Yeah, I was playing guitar since I was 12. I'm 32.
So you got 20 years of experience.
Yeah.
Over 20 flavors of mayonnaise.
Yeah, available. Thanks. Thanks, Final Corp. So I was just playing guitar then when I first discovered them. But then really I really fell in love with Lamb of God. I remember like song... As the Palaces Burn on that album was just... It was weird. It was weirdly great.
Because to me, that doesn't seem like extreme metal.
They're their own genre. To me, it seems like... They are in their own genre to me.
It seems like new metal. Like new metal.
Except for they're good. And there's a lot of new metal where it's... I feel that there's some integrity missing.
Yes.
And I can't follow that.
There was a lot of that. There's a lot of that. I make up that there's a lot of that in certain bands that I've seen and experienced. And like Dream Theater.
You know,
like kind of lauded. And they're masters. You know, I have a lot of respect for those guys.
They can play like crazy.
They are true virtuosos, each one. But, you know, I could just never get into it.
Me either.
And I don't know why, because I think it is possible to be a virtuoso and be very tasteful and artistic. And if something is quote unquote technical, that doesn't make it any less possible to make it a total artistic success, you know.
And there are some really good examples of that, where people who are so crazily technically good, but they can... don't have to always be like Steve Vai, for example. Right. See, it's always just crowning.
Yeah. See Mozart, Bach.
See. And of course, metal's borrowing from Mozart and Bach every day. Every day. So, yeah, the song CAFO by, what's that band's name? They play like 7 string guitars. It's totally amazing. Animals as Leaders. If you are interested in what I'm talking about with metal, but don't want to hear all that screamy stuff, check out Animals as Leaders. And there's no denying that a lot of it is amazing.
Yeah.
And there's no, it's all instrumental.
Right.
And they're amazing.
I like Faith No More because they do delve into some of that quote unquote technical extreme metal stuff. But Mike Patton is singing.
Which is cool.
And he can do the throaty, guttural, incomprehensible stuff. But sometimes he's just like doing the operatic shit. And it's great. And I want more of that in music.
Yeah.
Have you been in any extreme metal bands?
I have. You know, I just found it so great that I just had to do it myself. Yeah.
Okay. You started the band and you were the only member and...
Yeah. I've been have in a million bands. Cassette tapes, right? I think they're in the closet.
What's that?
I think I still have some cassette tapes from my very, very first 4-track.
I definitely have that stuff.
Oh, fuck. It is in my closet. Looping riffs. And it's like, it's some of it's kind of cool, but you can hear it's my very first attempts. And it's pretty heavy. Right?
Oh, man, that's a good idea for an episode. 4-track episode.
I can play. We can both play some of it. We
bring in some of our old 4-track shit.
Oh, man.
I have a shoebox full of tapes.
Do you have a tape to MP3?
No.
We got to get one of those.
We could just do it with the Sony Walkman.
Do you have a Sony Walkman?
No.
Okay, we need something. We're missing one piece of equipment.
Anything that plays cassette. If anyone has a cassette player and you want to donate it to us, send it to the address on the website. Thanks.
Yes, and if you have a cassette to MP3 and want to loan it to us,
right,
in your local, or not local, we could ship it back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
If you're close enough, we can actually bicycle it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
That'd you be send fun it, trip. You send it to us, and we'll bicycle it back to you, deliver it. So what? Okay, so you've been in extreme metal bands.
I've been in some such extreme
as
metal,
such yeah. as and when.
So, oh man,
what was your first extreme, quote unquote, extreme metal band?
You know, I'm gonna go ahead and say, it's kind of okay. It's a gray area. No, there's a little bit of a gray area because this is my right as I was like really in the throes of enjoying a lot of emo, like Newfound Glory,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I was enthralled by their technical breakdowns and their cool yeah. timing changes, yeah. but it was very, very approachable. And so I really got into that. And then I heard stuff that was like that, but there was screaming and I was like, oh, that's kind of like cool Snapcase. Too. I'm not familiar with Snapcase.
Okay. Hardcore.
Hardcore. I got into some hardcore, but not a lot of it actually. It was more like the Gothenburg really got me going. Hmm. But,
So what was the first? What was the band
I'm talking about is called Beautiful Fury.
Okay, that's the band where you thought I'm an extreme metal player.
It really was like I started the band not that, but as it evolved, there was double bass, there was blast beats, so there was screaming.
You were playing drums?
No, I was playing guitar. A legendary drummer of the band, the Has-Beens. Currently, he drummed with me in the band. His name's Chris Enos.
Huh.
He's quite a character.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where do you think extreme metal is headed?
You know, I'm really enthralled by this band, The Browning. It's like a kind of like a tech core death metal, but it's also got electronic music mixed in. So they have screaming and cool riffs and really tech, like really metal elements. And then they have like electronic music, dub bassy breakdowns. And
the Venn diagram keeps splintering.
Yeah. It's really
bubbles
good.
Keep forming.
They're good too, which helps. Cause I've heard other stuff kind of like that was really bad. It seemed more like the Browning seems like they were metal people and then started liking electronic music. What I've heard before seemed like electronic music makers tried putting metal in, and I never thought it was cool. But the Browning is my first experience of going like, okay, yeah. And I'd love to hear more bands like that.
Hmm.
But I think that's a direction that is going to keep going. I think there's going to be other groups that do that, and I think they're going to be... There's going to be like toury, festival-y things that are cross-blended, metal, electronic, and there'll be lots of rotating cast members and bands and stuff like that.
What would be the ideal future that you could envision?
Well, that's a great question. I could ideally envision,
for
like,
extreme metal.
Say, we as an online entity of lovers of this kind of music and music like it, we build... an annual and a biannual festival. We find land, probably private, and we rent it. And we set up stages and workshops, and we camp there. So we operate under essentially the Burning Man principles of an event like this. And in that same fashion, we build it around the community of metal and metal adjuncts like electronic, the Browning, things like that, right. Where we share skills, we have performances, and we camp out together around fires. And
sounds great.
That's what I think the best case scenario for the future is to do that for metal.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. Basically mini Burning Mans for metal.
Cool. You could have metallurgy like workshops on site.
Absolutely. I'd love it.
You could have like portable metallurgy, and you could be skydiving and doing metallurgy So it's like extreme metal. With an X. Just X-T-R-E-M-E. Extreme.
Yeah. You could do that.
So that's the direction you would prefer. That you enjoy.
I think me and my current band are like trying to work to make that happen. Because we're not seeing it happen. We want it to happen. And so we're thinking... I'm talking about Evan Jenks.
Filling a need.
Yeah. Filling a need. Yeah. I think people would be into. And it would be fun and we'd learn stuff and it would be really hard. But it'd be cool. So, I don't know. Let's see what we can do.
How does technical proficiency contribute to reputation of bands?
Is it seen as better if you're able to play scales, harder scales, faster?
There's definitely a vein of that. There's definitely a vein of bands over different genres that they sort of seek to climb this mountain, sort of like to find the fastest sweeper and to have it all be tapped in the diminished J. You know, it's like, and that's cool, and people are going crazy, and they probably keep going crazy, and I implore the quest. Like, there's people I know that are so amazingly good at instruments. Like, I can't even imagine how, like, the generation after us are going to surpass them, but they are. Mm. I can't even imagine it. Mm. I don't know what else you could do to a fucking six-string guitar, but it seems like our kids are going to probably do something else.
It should be
like
hybrids, synthesis of many things.
Well, yeah, and people are playing with more strings nowadays more often.
How about Super Janitor?
Super Janitor?
As a name, as an alter ego for a guitar player. An extreme metal guitar player named Super Janitor.
What does that mean?
It means he does the fastest sweeps. Forget Buckethead. We got Super Janitor in our band.
Was that a pun?
Nailed it.
Are there any other words over there that seem interesting?
Yeah, it's...
We ready?
Hang on, we got...
okay.
Just very quickly okay, here.
Brief.
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience. Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Thank you, Final Corp, for sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, folks, if I could just please implore you to just give Final Corp a try. I know they have a lot of products. I know that they kind of have a lot of products that do a lot of things. My most favorite one, of course, is Multi-A's. But my for sure second favorite is the Mister. Now, how many times have I enjoyed my Mister? Like, at festivals, you just missed. No one can tell. You're missing. And with the new zipper-on attachment, you can go anywhere. Final Corp.
Final Corp!
So, what were some other heavy metal bands you were in?
I was in...
Well, I guess this... Well, I don't know. Maybe I should save this. Is there anything more you want to say about extreme metal?
I guess I'm curious about any of those other words we had there.
Origins, talked about that. Legacies.
I think we covered that.
Progression.
Yeah, we're good.
And I talked about your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about the direction. What would be a cool direction for extreme metal?
I did that. We did that.
We did that. What does extreme metal mean? We did that. How does technical proficiency contribute to reputation? We covered that. We kind of covered this. What is the aesthetic of extreme metal? We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Its characteristics, its qualities, tempo.
We did that.
Usually up-tempo. Mm-hmm. Scales. Mm-hmm. Is it usually major, minor?
Minor.
Content, a lot of hate.
Well, that's...
You were saying there was a lot of hate.
There is. It does exist in metal and in extreme metal. There is some focus on gore and destruction, and I think that's like a natural part of expression.
Hmm.
But in my musical expressions, I'm more in the sort of philosophical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say that there are commonalities among metal? Like, what makes it metal? If there are commonalities.
You have to have distorted guitar. If you don't have distorted guitar, I don't think it can be metal. But that's not always true because I've recorded acoustic metal, right? So, but
if
that,
you
maybe
say so.
That maybe
if
that's
you
not
say
the,
so, yeah.
Maybe that's not the line, you know. I don't know, maybe there's a different line, but
folk metal. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's something about distorted guitar and heaviness, I think.
Heaviness kind of the, meaning like beats that are on the 1 and 4/4 and groovy.
I mean, the lower register of the guitar, playing it in a, like, either fast or palm muted or strummed hardly.
But backed up with a percussive element.
Often, but not necessarily.
That makes it, what makes it heavy then? Just the distortion? And
I think it's like something about the low register aggression. Of the guitar and it being in a rhythmic way.
Aggression, like, the aggressive low register guitar distortion.
Aggressive? I'm not sure if I'd use the word aggressive, but maybe other people would.
Repetitive?
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. But oddly, lots of metal bands now aren't very repetitive. Like Fallujah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with aggression, by the way.
Yeah.
Are you in an extreme metal band now?
I am.
So you would, if you were, you mixed down and exported your MP3 and you were editing the MP3 tags under genre, you would put extreme metal.
Mm-hmm. I would put probably also,
yes,
acoustic black metal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Black metal.
Yeah.
Extreme metal.
Mm-hmm.
Extreme because of the technicality.
Mm.
Black because of the subject matter and
sonorous originations.
Lineage.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's lineage, right? How you classify your own band is a lot of that's lineage, like who you identify with, what other bands that came before you that you identify with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way of putting it.
So what's the name of your band?
Nihlotep.
Nihlotep. How is that spelled?
Nihlotep.
We'll link to it.
Yeah.
We have in the past. We will again.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that Nihlotep is making an album. What's the state of the album?
Well, we've finished all tracking, and we are just now mixing. Pretty soon we should have the first mix, and then we'll go, hey, turn this up, turn that down, and then that's it, and then we're done.
And you've been in bands before, you've recorded albums before, and you've done mixing sessions before?
Mm-hmm.
Have you done mastering sessions before? Have you ever sat in
on all of it, yeah.
Okay. Mastering is pretty special.
Yeah.
That's the part of the process that I think I'd least understand.
I would agree.
Mastering.
Yeah.
It was really a huge learning experience getting our album mastered and just being there. And the guy being like, yeah, I have this, you know, this young woman who works for me. And he's like, it's unbelievable. She has like these ears from heaven. I don't know how she hears what she hears.
Hmm.
I was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like this would be this is the industry for like people who can hear really fucking well.
The musical industry,
specifically mastering. Mm. You want everything to occupy its own frequency space, right? You want the bass to be heard in its own frequency space, the keyboard, the vocals. Everything has to kind of carve out its own area. And you want everything to be at a good volume, but also full-bodied. Like, it's really, I don't fully understand. I'm in awe of it.
Yeah, that's a step that we also have to do, of course.
I've done all the other steps, but not the mastering process.
Hmm. Neither have I. It's a mystery.
There's a story of the guy who mastered Thriller, playing it on his father's shitty cassette player, playing it in the car of the shittiest sound system he could possibly find, playing it in really great quality, everything in between. He tested every gradient for Thriller, and he was like, if it sounds good on this the shittiest, jankiest cassette player I can possibly find,
yeah,
then it's going to sound great, you know, like just consistently. And he was right.
Wow. He is right.
An anecdote that kind of pulling out of my ass, but yeah.
Thank you.
And I think that's what you have to do, is you have to master it for all mediums.
Hmm.
Or someone who's really good at it. That's what they do. Everything's distinct. You can turn the volume way down and still hear every instrument.
That's something.
To me, that's what mastering is.
Yeah.
Nyarlathotep. Is that Egyptian in origin?
Well, it's two different words from two different languages. Nile, like German nil, nothing. Hmm. Otep, Egyptian suffix to god kings. The deified void.
Hmm. That's cool. More poetic. It's very Gnostic.
Yeah. Very Lovecraftian.
Yeah, the idea that God may exist, but he's exiled. He's not here. He either has forsaken or has been exiled from our universe. And here we are, alone to deal with it. That's cool. I wanted to talk about, I don't know if we have time for this.
We got time for this.
I don't know if we have time for this, but.
Hey, we got time.
It's an interesting idea. Band history. Let's say a band resume.
Hmm. That's good.
You had to put together a CV of bands, right?
We should do that. That's a good idea.
We should do that. We should prepare
that. Let's do it right now.
Maybe for next. It's fucking complex, man.
You can start at the beginning. You know what the first band you were in. What's the first
can
band
Can we get
you
to
were
both
in?
Of us? I guess we could do both of us and still have a tidy one hour, 15-minute episode.
What's so, the first band you were in?
Should we switch off?
Yes.
Should we do like
yeah, back and forth.
When did I start? Ninth grade. In ninth grade, I skateboarded. I had skateboarded for a few years, but kind of in ninth grade, it really flourished. I met a lot of kids, and I had two friends. One was named John, and the other one was named John. And one was a
John. What city was this?
One was a John, one was a Jonathan. And one of them played drums, and one of them played guitar. And I met them through skateboarding. But they were into music, you know, they were getting into music. One of them played drums, one of them played guitar, and I was kind of like, well, what? I'm not going to be the lead singer. I'm like Mr. Bashful, so I'll play bass. That's when I first got a bass.
Hmm.
And it was a janky-ass Ovation bass. I think I talked about taking the frets out of it before.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about that? Did we talk about that on the air?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, it's a different thing. So I had an Ovation bass and an amp, and I played with those guys. So that was ninth grade, was basically my first band, and we called ourselves State Law. State Law. We were all straight edge.
Hmm.
So that was ninth grade.
Do you have, were you in a band before ninth grade?
No.
When was your, what was your first band? Or in ninth grade, what was your, were you in a band in ninth grade?
No. I was playing guitar, but I really think it was 10th grade.
10th grade.
I think 10th grade. I had my very first band where there was like four of us and we practiced and had shows. So that counts as a band.
Mm-hmm. If you play shows, it's a band.
Yeah, we play like three or four shows. Its band was called Parasite Funk Project.
I love it. I love it. That was 10th grade.
Yeah.
Okay. 10th grade, I think I was still in state law.
We should have done shows, man.
I was on the East Coast. And then I think in 11th grade was my next band, Incarnation. So was there anything for you between 10 and 11? 10th grade and 11th grade?
We had any other bands? No, we had that same band. We still had that in 11th grade, Parasite Funk Project, where we played like at the church. We had like our biggest show was at like Youth Day at the church at Lake Don Pedro.
And you would go on later to diss the church in Nyarlathotep. Yet your roots are in the church.
Well, no, my roots weren't in the church.
The roots of the playing music.
Well, the roots of live there. Playing was in, that's true. The roots of live playing was at a church. My very first not at home show, because we played like on the porch too, and there was a bunch of kids over.
Sure.
We did that, and you could because we had a bunch of acreage, and it was like open spaces and stuff.
That's cool. So that was 11th grade.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 12th grade, my brother started playing guitar before that, but in 12th grade it was like, or maybe late 11th grade, it was me, my brother, and John on drums. So it was John on drums, my brother on guitar, and me on bass and vocals, and our name was Namesake, and it was a three-piece power trio. It set the stage for many, many such constructions, band constructions from then on. And we were called Namesake, and we had a clutch of songs and played.
You wrote them?
Yeah, we kind of all wrote them, but I kind of wrote them. I don't know. It's disputed. And then 12th grade, me and John, who played guitar, we just like completely buckled down on it. We'd play many nights a week, practice many nights a week. Just sitting there writing songs, me on bass, him on guitar. Slowly adding stuff and practicing. That was eventually called Creepy Woods.
Creepy Wood?
Creepy Woods.
How long were you in Creepy Woods?
It was like 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
From the end of high school into college, because we went to college together too. So we continued doing that.
Through? Wow. That's rare.
For the first couple of years of college, and we got kind of a record deal. We did it.
What was your record deal?
It was with Dirty Girl Records. And we had a 7-inch. And we went and recorded, played some shows in Rochester, New York, and around that area, Ithaca. So, senior in high school, were you in a band?
I think that Parasite Funk Project had kind of devolved by then, and I was not in a band. Yeah.
When was the next band that you were in?
So I left high school. And I moved back to Redwood City, California, to live with my mom. And I was pretty quickly became hired by Southwest Airlines when I was 18.
Were you in a band when you were working for them?
Not immediately, no.
When was the next band that you were in?
So I
reconnected. What age were you in the next band?
I think I was
19
or 20.
Okay, was my next band. Like your college year band.
Yeah, I didn't go to college, but yeah, year band. Yeah. So, like, I was working for Southwest Airlines at, like, 18. And then I reconnected with some old friends from before high school, like, from grade school.
Mm-hmm.
and then hung out with them when I moved back to Redwood City. And they welcomed me with, you know, open arms, and it was great. And it was a lot about cars. We all, like, they had hot rods, and I ended up having hot rods.
And you had some knowledge about cars, right?
Yeah, well, I'd grown up working on cars, and my dad always worked on cars, and I was there for a lot of it. And I've ended up having a lot of friends who know a lot about cars, like these guys, and then I've done some stuff, yeah.
Hmm. Cool. So, yeah, 18, I guess eight, when I was 18, I was in Creepy Woods. We were doing shows on college campuses. And I was also in a band called Drift, playing bass. And it was almost like Creedish. But this was like 1993, mind you. And
on bass? You were on bass?
Yeah, I was on bass. And I just joined every band I could, you know. And I also played drums for this band, The Mysterians.
The Mysterians.
Yeah. And we had some pretty high-profile shows, and it was such a learning experience because I was completely out of my element.
Oh, yeah?
Should not have been doing what I was doing. You know, but I had an attitude of like, well, I'll just learn how to do it and do it. But then it was so high energy, so fast, I couldn't keep up, and it was, you know, it was very much like, oh, I need to get better at this, be able to do this.
So they had too much material for you to cover at that time?
It was just too fast and too punkish. I couldn't keep up with it in terms of playing drums to it.
Oh. Because they wanted to go...
And I would get fatigued.
And you'd go...
But we had some high-profile shows, and it was fun. Whatever. So, yeah, I was playing Creepy Woods, Drift, Mysterians. And then also... I mean, it was just an abundance of bands. Everyone would like... Dispositions wanted to play together.
Hmm.
So I was in a band called Switzerland. And I was in a band called Sky Park, playing drums again. Switzerland too, playing drums. Yeah, that was like college. I played a lot of drums for a lot of bands. And guitar too. Played for the Seventh Level.
Super cool.
I had a band called the Seventh Level Fighters where I had all my guitar songs. Distorted guitar, and I was the lead singer and guitar player, and that was a lot of fun. We had a lot, because it was easy to get shows. You know, you just be like, oh yeah, we have this band that wants to play, and it could just be your band. You know what I mean? It was so easy to get book shows at these places on campus
because they just wanted that all the time.
Yeah, and we were just always playing music. It was cool.
That's awesome.
So that was like very much a flush period of playing in bands.
Hmm.
What was the next, what age were you the next band that you were in?
The next band I was in.
After 19, 20.
That band was Beautiful Fury. That was the band I mentioned previously. We had a female singer and a rotating cast of bassists, but it was Chris Enos and I. And sometimes Mr. Jeremiah Chinese, who played some bass in that band.
Hmm.
And that was kind of, which leads interestingly to, well, I guess I should speak about a little about Beautiful Fury. It was like, I kind of had the idea to do basically Evanescence before I had heard Evanescence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard Evanescence. And I was like,
huh.
Well, they basically did what I was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
I was like, dang it, that's good. And that's what I wanted to do. But then I was like, you know what? I still have these interested people. I was like, I'm going to go heavier. And then
yeah. You
can ask Chris in those days. He would complain regularly about like, man, what's with all the double bass? Sheesh, why so fast? And it's like, And I was like, dude, I don't know. And so we made cool melodic female vocal music with some heavy breakdowns and cool melodies and stuff. And we played shows, and that was like through being 20, like 19 through like 20 and a half, 20, I don't know, something. A couple years there.
So we're going up to basically 22.
We're about there, yeah.
I think I went to 22. Wait.
Well, anything actually, there's another, yeah, there's another band I was in at the same time, actually, as Beautiful Fury and before, and that is the Has-Beens. And okay. The Has-Beens is a punk band, and I played guitar.
Yeah, I think I've heard of them.
Yeah.
They were once pretty good.
Yeah, they once were. And I got to play some stuff with them, and that was cool. I ended up bowling in their punk rock bowling tournament in Vegas, and that was just an insanely good time. So I was in those two bands at the same time, and then at the same time as that, also I started jamming with Evan. So there was this period I was in three bands at the same time. That was the Has-Beens, Beautiful Fury,
around 21, 22,
and then the third thing that began was, I guess we were calling it Apocryphy at the time. Apocryphy was Evan on the drums and me on guitar. Huh. And we did some covers and some originals he had written, and I came up with some stuff.
Nice.
Some of that eventually became
that's into Origins.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So that's into like 23.
Yeah, okay.
So 23. What about,
you want to go to 23?
What about you? What bands were you in about that time?
23. I just graduated from college, came home. And what I wanted to do was be in a band with Dave Z and Jim M. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because I would come home the summer before I came, you know, would come home for a vacation. And they just had these fucking songs. And it was a drummer and a guitar player. Just had these fucking heavy tunes. Totally down. But no bass.
Huh.
So I just wanted to be a part of that, so I did that. And we were called Bropos.
Bropos?
Bropos, yep.
What does that mean?
Played a lot of shows. Bropos is a name that we gave to a giant boulder that rests in the woods of New England.
Cool.
It's a place that we would go to. Very deep into the woods, and it was just like suburban woods, right? Nothing much. Flat pine trees. But then you deep enough, you encounter this boulder. Just a giant rock. Like an egg. Giant egg sitting there in the middle of the forest. Trees all around it, but it's just there. Huge. You crawl up on it and be 15 feet up. It just looks like a chipped egg. And so we called that the Egg of Bropos. And we used to go out there a lot and do a lot of, like, communing, if you will. Spend a lot of time out there, and Bropos became part a mythology, a story in itself, with all this mythology. With the fingers of Ordwash were the roots on the path that led you there. Right, so we came up with this whole mythology of this place called Bropos, and that's why we called our band Bropos. And we played really kind of sludgy, heavy, technical metal with a singing voice. Not unintelligible voice.
Did your drummer have double bass?
No, he was a bottom guy. He was a bottom guy. He was all about, you know, doing the double. If you want to do the you just do that with a single bass.
But
he wouldn't do that. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily that extreme, but it was heavy in the kind of Sabbath mode. You know, like sludgy, like. You know, shit like that. Like, the guitarist was very much Testament, Megadeth, Metallica.
Yeah, right on. Cool.
Yeah. Big Testament guy.
Cool.
So that was 23. That was 23. That was Bropos. The band Bropos I had. That was like 23 to 25.
So what was your next band after those bands? What was your or what happened next for you musically, I guess?
I went to a show that Jim was playing drums with this band called Unraveled. And I went to the show and I was like, it's good. It's like Jim's playing some good drums. The guitar, I really like the guitar player. Wow, it's cool. Totally reminds me. His style reminds me of the kind of style that I like in guitar players, you know?
Mm.
Like very deliberate, you know? Mm. You can tell he's not sloppy. He's not trying to do some glam sloppy bullshit.
Mm.
He's actually deliberate, cool. playing it right, quote unquote. And he could sing. And I was like, wow, that'd be cool to jam with those guys. Turns out they were breaking up. So we got together and we called ourselves Sunset is a Battle.
Mm-hmm. That's a cool name. I remember I've heard that name. That's cool.
It was a power trio.
Hmm. That's fun.
Jim with his energy, total fucking rock drums. Power. And, you know, me doing my usual bass kind of shit. And Ryan on guitar. Total maniac of technique, songwriting, gearheadishness, you know, like a committed guitar player.
Hmm.
Super fucking committed. Sure. It was kind of unbelievable. And because of him that we could do all the covers that we did. So that was Sunset is a Battle. That's like 23 to 25.
Hmm.
So anything up to 25?
Let's see. Yeah, I think I ended up that Beautiful Fury. We never really even officially ever broke up. We just sort of, the show stopped. And then I remember people went to school and other places. And, you know, it just sort of fades off. Yeah. And then Chris, the drummer, gets really into the Has-Beens and still is to this day. Still rocking it with the Has-Beens, and that's super cool.
Hmm.
And so I was basically doing the Apocryphy thing, and we have some little demo stuff that if we can get that tape machine, we can have on the show here.
Hmm.
And we have this cool cover of a Dimmu Borgir song that Evan and I did, and it's pretty cool. And from then on, I kind of jammed with a few people, like, people needed guitarists or a bass player. Like one time I jammed a few times with this band on bass.
Mm.
They just needed somebody to hold something down for them to solo on. And so we affectionately called them Sandals and Solos. Cause like the guy brought his own stool and he had like a million pedals and he wanted just somebody else to play the song so he could noodle basically. And you know, that wasn't that much fun for me. That's not really what I wanted to do. So I didn't really do that much. And then basically Evan and I moved forward and then began right about that time, his Prophet and Scepter. And that's like a manifest incarnation sort of the previous thing.
Prophet and Scepter.
His Prophet and Scepter.
His Prophet and Scepter.
Yeah.
You guys were anti for a while, right?
You know, it was. There was.
No, I'm not going to cast any judgments.
Well, I'm curious. I'm curious. What do you mean by pretentious? My mind is curious.
Well, a lot of metal is what Nabokov would say posh lost. Like, there's this inflated sense of importance in the kind of naming of things, you know? Making it, like, super. Super verbose and pseudo poetic, you know, like there's this inflated, if it's too inflated, I'm not, it's posh lost.
I think I agree with you. And the subject I would use is As I Lay Dying, like that band name, I think. Okay. Very much identifies what you're saying.
I thought you were talking about the novel. I was going to punch you.
So As I Lay Dying.
The band name, As I Lay Dying, yeah.
As I Lay Dying, I think identifies with what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't like that.
And there's a certain...
Too, it's too inflated.
There's an inflated pessimism. Right? And I agree that that's not an image that I would want to project, but I still hold solemnness for their freedom of expression.
Sure.
But I agree with you that that is not my channel. So
23, 25. Okay, yeah.
You ready?
So that was 25? You done with 25? Do you get it all out?
I guess at that point, his prophet and scepter got pretty serious with the practice. We were a solid five piece for quite some time.
Hmm.
And we had this really, really amazing set of talent. It was just so... such a talented room, and there was a lot of unmet needs and missed communications, and there was a lot of stepping on and misunderstanding, and there was many challenges from that, but in that way we eventually were practicing 3 days a week for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah,
we were as tight as a something that's really tight.
As a funeral drum?
As a funeral drum.
Same here, man, with Sunset as a Battle. We lived together. We had our musical set up in the basement. We'd practice 3 times a week, and then we'd play 2 shows each weekend. Playing 5 nights a week. It was insane. And we kept doing it, making good money. But it was like our chops were fucking crazy. You get your chops up so to such a hyper level. It was like music college. Jim and I would joke about it. It's like, yeah, we went to music college because we just like playing music every night, essentially. Hmm. 5 nights out of 7.
What was the name of that band?
Sunset as a Battle. And we would play cover shows to finance our original albums. And we had released two albums.
What were they called?
Future Museum was our first album. Our second album was Mirrors and Errors.
Huh. Future Museum. I like that.
That was a double album. It was
Your first album was a double album.
Yeah, and there's a lot of heavy shit on there. It was all heavy shit, actually most of it.
It's like metal?
Borderline.
So like experimental rock?
Like heavy prog rock. You know, I wouldn't say it's metal, like there wasn't any of that.
Yeah.
But it was heavy oriented. Up tempo, heavy, like, and proggy, kind of yesy. Like we're gonna go into this act here, you know. We're gonna pull the curtain here and we're gonna go into this part of the play.
That reminds me of Nihilotep.
There was a narrative for every song.
Yeah,
definitely. That was maybe one of our strengths, is that we had kind of a narrative bend to our stuff.
So you moved here, and then what was your next musical experience?
Elliot and I played together. My friend Elliot and I played together, and we did a lot of Rankly Fulci. That was the name of our band.
Rankly Fulci.
Yeah, Rankly Fulci.
Wow, that's a hard name.
I did that, and then I joined Warbler for a while, which is my friend Sean's band. You know, I did a lot of recording by myself, and a lot of collaborative shows, but now I'm playing in Giant Electric Spider and playing with It's Kind of Good, this band, It's Kind of Good.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a good band. Kind of a good name.
It's kind of good.
Kind of an accurate name. Wow. That's like, we're up to date now.
Wow. Shoot,
that was,
man.
That was my history. So we got to go from your history from basically 25 to now.
So, okay.
Which
is
7 years.
So it was Prophet and Scepter. We practiced like maniacs, as I was saying. And then we ended up, we hadn't played a show yet. We still had not played a show in this whole crazy practice regimen. The drummer we had was a kid. He was like 16, and he moved from the East Coast to join our band when he heard our demo. And he was like, yeah, that's what I want to do.
No shit.
And he had his own amazing drum kit that he shipped out, and wealthy parents. Yeah, and him and his sister moved out here, and she went to school, and he joined our band. It was really cool. So, in his Prophet and Scepter, we had all that practice, and we ended up in the studio Atomic Garden in East Palo Alto. We recorded a 3-song demo. It was pretty raging. We had like 8 or 9 songs ready to go, but we could only really do that. And shortly after, the band broke up.
Cool. What about up to 30?
So, okay. So
up then, to the age of 30.
Yeah, so there we are. That band evaporated, and I took a break from music for a while. It was also the same time that my dad had died. Those events happened basically the same week.
It's a future episode.
Yeah. And
it's going to be a serious episode.
The break I took ended up being good. I was still living with Evan in San Jose, and he was writing some interesting music on piano in his room. And he was like, "Hey, I'm writing this new thing. Do you want to do this with me?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'm still on my break, really, because the whole worked super hard and for a really long time, and we never played a single show. And then the band broke up, and it's like really good music, I think." So that was a bummer, and so I stopped doing that for a while. And then he was like, "Come on, here's this new stuff." And he showed me the stuff he was writing. It was so unique. The melodies he had written were so different.
Was that what was unique about it, the melodies? The
melodies he had wrote on the keyboard written were...
Was he a keyboard unique. Player? Was he a guitar
yeah,
player?
He was teaching himself keyboard.
He's an autodidact, isn't he?
What does that mean?
Someone who self-teaches.
Yeah, he is seems self-teaching, like and he has taken lessons, too. And, yeah, so eventually I succumbed, but I said, you know, I'm not going to play guitar. I don't want to do that. I said, I'm going to play drums, and I had not played drums in a band before, ever. I had fooled around here and there in other people's kits.
Was that like a risk thing? Were you putting yourself out there, in a sense? Or was it like a jestful gesture?
A risk? What do you mean by risk?
Did you know that he would accept you in that role?
I think I had the confidence.
What was your hope?
I think I had the confidence that, and my hope was that he would, and did, recognize me as a talented person, and that regardless of my medium, that I'll be a contribution. And I think that was his opinion.
It just so happened that they needed a drummer.
Yeah, well, he needed everything. Right. In his view at that time, he was going to have everyone play everything else, and he was just going to just do vocals.
That's an interesting thing. Like, you and I both play the instruments we play more out of a default than any kind of, more out of circumstance than any kind of intention.
Well, when I chose that I wanted to play drums, that was like one of the first times that I had that made that intention. Where I was like, okay, I'm choosing this. But sure. I don't want to do guitar. Sure. I'm going to do drums.
Yeah.
And that to me was kind of newer-ish, because usually it's not.
That was newer-ish.
Yeah. So
I remember being committed to bass, and it was not fashionable to do that.
Yeah.
And
it's not popular, yeah.
And I developed my own aesthetic of playing bass. Like, I had my own kind of rule set and ethical guidelines that I stuck by, and I still adhere to to this day. It's a modality.
I get that.
A way to express what you're doing, and you have a very specific way of expressing that. So there's a lot of restraints. Like, in my aesthetic of playing bass, I play bass guitar, by the way. I don't know if you know that, but...
Oh, I'm familiar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You, Drew.
Yeah. I've heard. It's good.
I was speaking to our international audience.
Oh, yes, of course. If you didn't know, Aubrey does play the bass very well. I would say very well.
But it is a mind game. music is a mind game. And that's what I love about it.
So after after that break and Nilotep started with Evan, I bought his old drum kit from a person he had sold it to, which is a friend of ours, ex-girlfriend. She had bought it from him for like $800, and I bought it from her for the same. And we assemble it in the garage in the house in San Jose, and we plugged an ancient Casio keyboard into our 400-watt QSC amplifier. And so we played blast beats to like a beeping keyboard, like melodies.
Hmm.
And that was me trying out basically playing the music the first time. And right. That eventually we used to attract guitar players, if you can believe it or not.
I believe it.
Beeping and drums.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I see. And then we had a lot of tryouts.
So.
Yeah.
That seems like 2 years ago or something, right?
No, that was like 2006 something.
10 years ago.
It was around that time. So we finally found two guitar players and began writing all this music together. And we eventually recorded a demo. That band is Nilotep that I'm still in now. And then we recorded a full-length album. That was the thing I did. 80 minutes of recorded mm-hmm. music on the drums in one 24-hour day.
Right. This is some years ago, though.
Yeah. That was 2007, 8, 9.
You're in your 30s, my friend.
I know.
Everything's 10 years old now.
Everything's 10 years old.
Yeah.
So, and then we went on tour. And we built our own West Coast tour and toured Vegas and L.A. and up through Oregon and Washington. And all sure. around California. And it was great and hard and cool. And I hope to do it again. And we've gone through... We were in the studio a few years ago and we didn't finish a two-song EP that we started. And I hope to do something with that eventually. But now we just finished with our acoustic metal EP.
Hmm.
And then we actually already have stuff written for our next recording.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you're in a band called Nilotep, and you've just recorded your acoustic metal EP, and it's just about to come out.
That's right.
And I'm in a band called Giant Electric Spider, and we're ready. So we both got our things going on. Do you and I make music together sometimes, right?
We do, yeah.
Is that true?
That's true. What do we call that little venture?
What is that called?
It's called...
The thing's not filming. I'm so on camera all the time.
It's kind of good.
It's accurate.
It's an accurate title.
We spoke to our manager. He said, be honest. And I was like, well, that's kind of good. And actually, Drew said it the same. We both said it at the same time. It's kind of good. And our manager said, well, that's the name of it.
Hmm.
And that's the story so far.
Yeah. And we have a little bit of music we've recorded together. It's a mixture of, like, what genre would you call it?
Up-tempo satire.
Up-tempo satire. That's about right.
That's our genre.
Oh, also, I've played a lot with the band Battle Elk.
Hmm. I think we need to have, like, a band history part two.
You think
just
so?
Just like we need to have a bicycles part two episode.
Yeah, I think so.
But, okay, yeah, Battle Elk.
Yeah.
That's a current thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we haven't done anything for quite a while.
Thanks again to all our local, national, and international listeners. I'd really like to acknowledge everybody for everyone who listens. We really appreciate this. And the show is only going to get better. And the reason it's only going to get better is because you are part of it. Thank you very much for supporting the show. Thanks, guys.